The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello and welcome to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mara Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have, once again, our very special guest, filling in as a guest host this week, Dominic Sperano. Say hi, Dominic.
Hi, thank you.
And that is from Pronto Comics, right?
That's correct.
Who just celebrated 5 years?
Yeah, last night. It's 5 years.
So, to celebrate, you come on our show again?
Yes. It was the first place I knew I had to stop for the next 5 years.
Oh, yeah. All right. And also we have Hassan Godwin in some type of purgatory on the phone.
Yeah. I guess you could call it that.
I think he's scared of me because every time I'm supposed to come on, he's not here.
Yes.
See, there you go.
Yeah, I'm terrified.
Well, just because that one time.
That one time with the thing?
The thing and the guy and the place?
Yeah, that other time with the thing, with the guy. I'm sorry.
And our very own senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino, was called away at the last minute.
No ginger?
No, he was called away at the last minute because he has to fill in some ultra super sneaky mission from his past that he has to take care of.
Well, I know it's not shoveling snow like it was 3 months ago.
That's right, man.
Well, that would be bad if he was shoveling snow now.
Hey, man, with this past winter, anything's possible.
Yeah, that's true. There's no doubt about that.
With the weather we've been having, it's possible, yeah. Very possible. Yeah. Next week, we report there's going to be snow.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. If anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also, on the GBB website, you can see us. Not Hassan, unless you have that kind
not
of...
Not Hassan, no.
Yes, not Hassan, unless you have that kind of a spy equipment on the web camera right now. In high definition. Of course, that is if you're listening to us live in the future, which is a 7-second delay, or...
Move on.
All right, fine. And I will then take it away with the news.
Take it away with the news, Mark.
For the year 2014, as the news have been brought to you in part by the rat bastards at Belmore Towing, just in time for Mother's Day. If you want to be treated like your mother was when your father was around... Go deal with Belmore Towing.
Wow.
What the heck?
Wow.
We got to have one of the Belmore guys on the show.
And they pay for that kind of advertising?
They pay for it with their beautifully done, unscrupulous, yet very legal business practices. Located at 2720 Merrick Road in Belmore, New York.
Why are you giving them advertising? That's what I don't understand. There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Really?
Apparently they just were espousing spousal abuse, so maybe there's a little bit of bad advertising.
Yeah, well, yeah. that's what we call slander. It really has nothing to do with them.
That's what's called a 1950s household, circa I Love Lucy. Oh, you hit her pretty hard there, Ricky. Bam!
Wow. All right, well, you know what? I'm going to disassociate myself from those last comments, just personally. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to start with the sad news. Let's see.
Sadder than when your mom was still with you.
Yeah, like, really.
Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., best known as the star of drama 77 Sunset Strip and The FBI, has died. Actress Stephanie Zimbalist, which was his daughter, says, "We are heartbroken to announce the passing into peace of our beloved father, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. today in his California ranch. A devout Christian, he actively enjoyed his life to the last day, showering love on his extended family, playing golf, and visiting with close friends."
What got him?
They didn't say what got him.
Mm-mm. Okay. But the last time I was on, someone just died again, too. Sid Caesar just died.
Someone died every week.
This is terrible.
Well, that's why it's called sad news.
Yeah. Every week someone dies, so don't worry about it. Oh, okay. It has nothing to do with your appearances.
As an odd segue to this, before I finished reading this news, HarperCollins just sent us a book that I'm holding up to the web camera called Everybody Dies, Don't Feel Bad, a children's book for grown-ups.
Wow.
So
how did you do that? That's what I want to know. How did you do that?
Is that going to be like the topics of the day, death and spousal problems and stuff? I mean, it's, I thought we were going to talk comic books again, man.
We can certainly steer it that way. There's enough information for us to make a lot of hay of that.
Clearly. You know,
probably not.
77 Sunset Strip ran on ABC from 1958 to 1964. And then, after that show was done, in 1965 through 1974, Efren Zimbalist Jr. returned as Inspector Louis Erskine, the leader of the FBI. In 2009, the FBI made him an honorary agent, the highest honor the Bureau can give to a civilian. Efren also starred in such films as Wait Until Dark and Airport 1975, as well as Hot Shots. The last major film role he was in was in 2008's movie called The Delivery. Of note,
I have a question.
Yes.
What exactly could you do with that honorary membership of the FBI?
I'm sure you can arrest people and spy on them and beat people up.
Well, like Elvis.
You think so? You actually think he can utilize that, or he could have utilized that to his advantage? Like if, say someone got kidnapped, they would call Efren Zimbalist and say, look, you got to help me out. Someone's been kidnapped.
Well, like Elvis Presley was an honorary DEA agent, and he would use it sometimes, like to go through security checks with guns. And like, you can't do that. He's like, no, I'm a federal agent. Like, I can do it. He actually used it once to stop a plane.
Really?
Yeah, he stopped a plane because someone took some private Polaroids that he had of Priscilla, and he stopped it to go get the guy.
Wow.
So, you know, if you're a crazy celebrity, I guess you could try and make that, you know, if you got a badge, they don't know.
That is definitely an abuse of power, right there.
Well, he was the king.
Abuse of honorary power, as a matter of fact.
He was the king, so.
Well, yeah, that's true. He is the king. So. All right. Okay. Sorry.
Of note, in the 1980s, he had a recurring role on Remington Steele opposite his daughter, Stephanie Zimmer Jr., with Pierce Brosnan. And he had guest spots on such shows as Hotel, Murder, She Wrote, and hosted his own program called Word from the Holy Land. Holy Land. He also did voiceover work for numerous cartoon series, such as Spider-Man, The New Batman Adventures, and Justice League.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. So who? What character was he?
He was Alfred.
Follow-up. In the Batman. Yeah, he called with the follow-up.
Well, that one I knew. Matter of fact, that's where I knew him from, was being in Batman. I was like, let me do a little research on
it. It's amazing. Like, if you look through, like, the voice cast of that long run of Batman cartoons, like, the quality of actors they had show up in that thing.
It's quite amazing how that happened. And then I guess it's related to the 60s Batman, where the high actors of the time wanted to play the villains.
Yeah.
So it kind of, they all want to be with Batman.
You ever see the Facebook meme of, like, of all the different actors that played Batman, and like, no, I'm the real Batman. And it ends with the animated Batman, and Kevin Conroy's voice is like, amateurs, I'm the real Batman.
Also, Mark, just before you move on, what you said there is very poignant, that you recognize the guy's name, and then you use the R word just now. If I don't know if you realize that.
The R word?
Yeah, research.
Oh.
Which is why you were able to answer some follow-ups. So,
but this research was done 100 years ago, so...
This research is what's called childhood.
Well, no. You recognized him from Batman, and then you looked him up.
Back then.
That was hard. That was before Google.
Okay, fine. It's real. Research is real easy now, Mark. I'm just saying.
No, that was real research back then, before the internet, man.
So now it wouldn't even be research. So then I wouldn't get condemned for asking follow-ups, is what I'm saying. I get slapped on the wrist every week when I ask a follow-up.
You know, if you want to do the news, you're more than welcome to.
It ain't easy reading sheets of paper, man.
Fair enough.
In 2004, he published a memoir, My Dinner with Herbs, and he was 95.
Oh, no letter.
Wait, he was 95 in 2004? Or no, he was 95 now? Like, when he like, that dude had a long life.
Oh, yeah, he'd have, like, three letters by now.
Yeah.
He was 94.
Oh, 94 is a good run.
Yeah.
94 is a pretty good run. I'd like to make it to 94.
But if you get to be 100, you get the letter from the president. That's the whole thing.
Congratulations on not dying. You know?
I need to make it to 100. If I was in my 90s, I have to make it to 100. I'd feel obligated.
Well, I'm too old to become an Eagle Scout, so yeah, I guess I have to now just live for another 69 more years.
Speaking of more sad news. Actor Bob Hoskins, best known for a starring role alongside Roger Rabbit in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, obviously, died this week from pneumonia. Of note, Bob had already announced his retirement from acting after being diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 2012. Bob also starred in such films as Steven Spielberg's Hook, Super Mario Brothers, Mermaids, Nixon, and appeared as himself in Spice World. And also, his last movie to note was in Unleashed, which he starred with Jet Li.
That was a big role for him, actually.
Yeah.
In Unleashed.
And he was only 71.
Mm.
So it's amazing to put things into perspective in that sort of a thing.
Yeah, apparently Bob Hoskins hated Super Mario Brothers, too.
I think
everyone hated it. But the poor man had to act through it, so.
Did we actually even have to mention that he hated that?
No, like, he didn't just hate it, he loathed it. He loathed the entire process of it.
It's obvious from his behavior in the film.
Yeah, exactly.
his performance in the film that he hated every minute of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though he was getting paid for it, so.
Yeah, but, you know.
That's when acting's really a job.
Sometimes you go to work every day and you hate your job, you still get paid for it.
Very, very true, very true. Speaking of people acting in movies.
How's he doing?
Stan Lee goes back on his word and will make an appearance in this summer's Guardians of the Galaxy after all. Stan says, I can tell you that I don't understand what it was or why I did it. It was with a girl, a pretty girl, but you'll get a kick out of it.
Well, listen, I've done some silly things because of a pretty girl, too. So, you know, and it's turned out to
work out. Word to not be in the film.
Well, for those of you who have been listening to our show, Hassan, who is on the show and doesn't listen to the show, we reported that Stan was quoted as saying that he wouldn't make an appearance because he had neither created nor written the characters. Back then, he was quoted as saying, "I'm not even sure who they are."
Yeah, I mean, he had nothing.
Did we actually mention that on?
He didn't really have anything to do with Cosmic Marvel, so. As far as I know.
And yet, there he is.
Because, it's not a Marvel movie unless Stan Lee shows up.
Which show did we mention that on?
The one on Sunday.
The one on Sunday.
Yeah, I know. Which Sunday?
You know, the one a couple weeks ago.
The one a couple of weeks ago.
The one a couple of weeks ago. Okay, so see, there you go. That's what I have to work with. That's why my memory isn't perfect. This is no follow-up. Why don't you move on?
This is why you don't show up when I'm here now.
How dare you? Move on.
Woo.
Speaking
of...
This is how I got the guest host spot.
Speaking of moving along and finding things that are long past due, documentary filmmakers digging in a landfill in Alamogordo in New Mexico found hundreds of Atari 2600 ET cartridges that were reportedly hidden there by Atari when the game flopped in the early 1980s. There had been rumors.
They put the game in a landfill?
They put the game in a landfill.
It was like the Dead Sea Scrolls of Atari? What the hell?
There had been rumors that the millions of unsold games were buried there. Was considered a legend. Filmmakers say, for a lot of people, it is something that we've wondered about and has just been rumored and talked about for 30 years, and they just wanted an answer. The game, of course, was based on a 1982 movie, with the same name, E.T., and was blamed for the downfall of Atari. They thought it was going to be such a huge hit, that game. They made millions and millions of copies of that game and figured everybody would run to buy one, and everybody I knew had one. I had one. And it was a terrible game.
Didn't it come with the Atari at one point?
It might have, because they had so many of unused product.
It wouldn't be that the game console was just terrible. You know.
Atari 2600 was good times, man. Mm. Back in the day, if you had that or a stick, it was pretty good.
True. Sure.
And
the 2600 was the only game in town at the time until Coleco came out.
Right.
So, by today's standards, it's like an abacus. But, yeah. At the time, you were riding high if you had a 2600. But I know the 2600 eventually came with, the 5200 came with Pac-Man.
The original came with Combat was the first game that you got.
And then it started coming with Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Because that became their flagship game.
I'm honestly, I'm not a gamer. But my one and only game console was the original Nintendo. And that was, it was a pretty good game console. And then, friend got Sega. And I was like, oh, my God, Sega. Oh, look at this.
Yeah, Sega. Everybody had a Sega. Yeah, I'm not a gamer either. Everybody, you had to get a Sega. I still have my Sega.
You had to have one or the other, because it was like Marvel or DC. You got a Nintendo or a Sega.
It was in gaming, it's always like, the games are always great and everything, but it's really whatever the console is the next real true jump.
Right.
So it was Nintendo and then Sega, and then it was like Nintendo 64 was amazing.
Atari started that. Because Atari had the 5200.
Yeah.
Which was a big, which is a big jump. I actually had the Atari 5200 with the games that looked just like the arcade games, as opposed to the whatever kind of excuse
the square
for arcade
balls.
Games that the 2600 had. And my 5200 burned out 3 weeks after I got it. That's the story about that. That's notorious. Amongst my friends, that's just notorious burnout.
You have turnaround on the product.
It was pretty bad. But then the last game system I had was a PlayStation, the first PlayStation, and then I kind of bagged off of the whole thing. When the game started to become $50 a pop, it was time to get out. So,
if you remember when the PlayStation first came out, the PlayStation 2 first came out, they had a huge problem with it because they were making it and they didn't have enough chips and the fans weren't working, so it was constantly burning out. And I remember how bad the backlash was on that.
See, I just saved my money by not buying any of these things.
Good job saving your money.
That's right. I blew it all on comic books.
The documentary will be released on Xbox systems later this year. So now it's the only way to see it.
Ironic, isn't it? Yeah. Just a little bit?
Just a little bit.
I hope I'm using the word ironic correctly.
Speaking of spending money on comic books,
mm-hmm.
Marvel Comics just introduced a brand new character named Silk this past week, Wednesday, on Amazing Spider-Man #1. What makes her special, however, is that her origin, as well as her spider-based powers, comes from the same radioactive spider that bit Peter Parker in 1962's Amazing Fantasy XV.
An old spider.
Yeah.
Writer Dan Slott says, "The spider lived long enough to bite one more person. When I pitched the idea to one of our creative summits, everyone went, ooh.
That's bad."
Yeah, but if you really know comics, the Marvel Universe is only about 6 to 7 years old, always.
Yes.
So everything happened 6 to 7 years ago?
Yes.
So, it's not really a 1966 spider that built the character.
That's fair.
It's a 2007 spider. Yeah.
It still took 40 years for someone to think up the idea that the spider bit someone else. That's sad.
Really? Well, they're busy coming up with other great concepts like Spider-Man riding a Jeep and stuff.
Yeah, the spider buggy.
And the spider buggy,
He continues.
Right.
He continues
that's
to
the
say.
Official word. That's kind of scary.
They had to they had to explore great ideas like the Clone Saga.
Mm-hmm.
Which
Spider?
Yeah, the Scarlet Spider. I liked the Scarlet Spider. I thought that was a cool looking costume. Yeah, it was cool.
He liked the costume.
Yeah, the costume.
The costume was all right.
It's like an argument deflated. I remember I was talking to Bob Budiansky once on our podcast, and my managing editor Patrick J. Riley brought it up because when it came out, to him it was a great storyline. And the poor guy, his face just drops for a second. He's like, "Yeah, okay." No, we like the Clone Saga. He was like, "Really? Really? Huh?" It actually was not a bad idea. It just got way, way too
The concept was good, but the execution was terrible.
Yeah, and poor Bob, he came on like as it's like halfway through or like three quarters of the way through, so he had really no control over it at that point. He's like, all right.
People reading a book for 30 years and then turn around and tell them, oh, yeah, the guy you've been following, he's really not the guy. He's the clone of the guy. That's, you can't do that.
Well, there's a lot of things you can do, but they do to Spider-Man. I mean, you know, poor Joe Quesada still hasn't lived down Brand New Day, I think.
And
I like Joe Quesada.
He shouldn't. It's not when you go in there and you start, well, look, I'm good, you know, I'm going to take away everything you've been thinking about for the last 30 years. I'm going to change everything that you've been, you know, that you've been dealing with for the last 30 years. You can't do it. It doesn't work. Nobody likes it because, you know, they think about all the money and the time that they personally invested. I mean, there's a way to do it, but that's not the way to do it.
I distinctly remember I was at a convention with a Superman panel.
Mm-hmm.
They were celebrating however many years of Superman. Probably was 50 years. That sounds about right. Mm. And this was when he came back with the electric powers.
Oh, yeah. That was like, that really did not last long. It was weird.
And they were taking questions from the audience, and one of the guys was like, what did you do to my Superman? My years of reading this thing, and then you just go and kill him off, you change him, and you do all this stuff. Why did you do this? He's like, well, you know, we're trying to shake things up and trying to sell books. And
why they do the new 52? Because they were trying to shake things up.
It's true, and I do agree that you do have to make changes, and you do have to do things to keep it lively, since you're never going to end it. Since we haven't learned from the Japanese and just like, okay, kill the series already and start a new one.
There's some that just don't die. You can't
them. Yeah, I know. It's an American thing. It goes on and on. As long as it's making money, keep it going. That's fine. So sometimes you have to...
They tried to kill Superman. Then it got better. I mean, you can't do it.
Right. So you have to change things. I get it. But you can't you can't go in and just say, oh, okay, everything you've been... You know, you can't negate the entire story in order to change it. It doesn't work. It never works. It has never worked.
Well, define work. Like, does it work for the story? Or does it work for the company, and that gets everyone interested in it again? And then within a year, they change it back, and everyone's happy, and then they increase their readership.
No, because they're always talking about, you know, those things are a stain. They last. They're notorious. The comic sales drop. You know, people lose faith in the integrity of the brand, and they walk away from it, or it becomes a legend in the industry for all the wrong reasons. It's not the kind of publicity you want. It's not the kind of attention you want.
The only thing I can think of off the top of my head that did it right, and I know you will not agree with this, on, would be the Star Trek movie, because they kept the original intact, and yet they were able to move forward to open it for the broader audience.
No. Check again. The internet has redefined whether or not those films have successfully worked, and apparently no one's happy with anything.
Well, I'm saying the first one.
See, I liked the first one. I actually enjoyed the second one. Yeah. But okay. I liked the first
one. Well, that explains a lot.
I thought it was clever, though. Like, they pretty much explained everything through Spock, basically being the voice of the producers telling you, yeah, it's a reboot, and this is why it's a reboot, and this is how it's a reboot, and I'm going to explain to you with my logical voice.
And we keep everybody happy from the original people.
Right.
You think really think that movie makes any sense? Honestly?
The first movie?
Yeah.
As much sense as any other movie.
It's science fiction. How much of it makes sense?
Okay, well,
there's a show on TV that's been going for like over 50 years about a guy in a blue box. I mean, come on.
Okay. Oh, dead silence. All right.
See? There you go.
That doesn't mean you're right. This means I'm not arguing with you on the air.
That's right. Okay. I take that as I'm right, so it's fine.
Okay, fair enough.
He declares winner because no one else is arguing with him anymore.
Yeah.
All right. You want me to take the hour to negate the entire thing, and that's fine, but...
Let's see. Speaking of... Ooh, there we go. Speaking of movies and directors and reboots... It has been announced that Zack Snyder will direct Justice League for Warner Brothers just as soon as he's done with Man of Steel Part 2.
Oh, you mean Justice League 2?
He's the only guy we got.
Executive says, the plans for three superhero movies in relatively quick succession show how intent Warner Brothers is on catching up with rival Walt Disney's company Marvel Studios and building a cinematic superhero universe after years of lagging behind.
Yeah, switch intent with the word desperate, and you pretty much probably have the right call around that.
I was reading an article on this too, and like Marvel and Disney have so many properties spread out over like four different studios, and like 2 to 3 movies come out every year. The only thing that Warner Brothers has slated is for 2016, Batman Superman, which is supposed to be Man of Steel 2. Which is not. It's not. It's just basically
the Justice League prequel.
They've like, already announced that it's coming out simultaneous with Captain America 3.
And it's like when they release two different Bond films at the same time. My money's on Captain America 3 because there'll be so much like stuff built up before that everyone's going to want to see that. When the only thing that's built behind this is Man of Steel, which I enjoyed. I honestly did enjoy. Was it flawed? Completely. But I enjoyed it because,
you enjoyed Star Trek.
Well, because here's the thing. They're movies. They're not actual theological gospel, as so many people take it.
I
wouldn't even go by that far by saying it was gospel to enjoy a movie. I mean, certain movies I can enjoy just for the pure ridiculousness of it, such as Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Right, okay.
Because that was great, because it was so ridiculous. But what made it good was that they stuck with the concept, and they just went for it, and they made it work.
The concept in and of itself made sense in its own absurdity. I mean, they made rules in the craziness of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, and they stuck with the rules, as opposed to, let's say, Star Trek or Man of Steel, which they make rules in the beginning and then just break them for convenience. Which, yes, I understand. I agree with you. It's about a guy in blue pajamas that can fly to the moon. So yeah, how much are you gonna insist that it makes sense? But if it tells you that the guy can fly to the moon, and then halfway through the film, as an example, as a hypothetical, halfway through the film, he doesn't make it to the moon for some undisclosed reason.
Plot point.
And it stops making sense. And then you have to detract yourself from it. It takes you out of the fantasy, and it ceases becoming entertainment.
Well, wait, hold on. What was the rule that they broke in Star Trek? Or what were the rules that they broke in Star Trek that drove you nuts?
If it's supposed to be in the same Star Trek universe, though it is a alternate universe, then the rule that's broken primarily is that it doesn't take anything to be a Starfleet officer. A guy can come in and 4 years later they give him the flagship. No. Unacceptable. That was the beginning. There are very few, let's say, sequential holes in the first Star Trek. The second Star Trek is a disaster. Okay, and we're not even going to get into that.
The second Star Trek has more holes in it than the Iraqi Navy. I'll give you that one. But, you know, the first one, it's called field promotion, which is a given thing in any sort of military unit. So field promotions are completely viable. He was given a field promotion to first officer when Pike left.
No, Pike says you can have your own ship in 4 years when they're in the bar, when he's trying to get him to enlist. So, yes, I could have bought a field promotion. But if you already say, you could do this, you could shortcut this, or you could sidestep this in an entire academy, along with the fact that Spock was in Starfleet for X amount of years, up to the point where he becomes a commander, and is designing training programs, then it doesn't make any sense that guy would turn into the captain or the first officer. It makes no sense. So it's nonsensical. And that's for starters. That's before we get into everything else.
Well, one could say that Pike was telling him he could have a show and ship in 4 years in terms of after graduating from Starfleet.
You said no. He didn't say that. He didn't say you have to.
So you're taking it way too literally and just not giving suspension of disbelief.
You can't use that argument. You said you asked me where the holes are. I'm just telling you where the holes are. You can't use the now you're taking it too seriously argument. That doesn't make any sense.
Sure it does. It's like you're reading way too literally into what's being said.
I'm listening to the words that are being spoken to me that I paid to hear.
This
and the conveyance of information coming from the film in and of itself.
All right, this reminds me. There was a convention where the writers of Star Trek Generations.
Right.
Was at a convention.
Okay.
And they were fielding questions, which is always the best thing because they never know what's going to be asked.
Right.
And one of the guys went up there and he said, well, you know, in Star Trek Generations, During the climax of the battle, they had a warp core breach, and then they blew up the ship. And but you know, they had the same thing on the episode of blah 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 and Star Trek Next Generation. They just ejected warp core. Why didn't they do that in the movie? And the writer said, "It's just a movie," and everyone went boo. Because you can't say that if you're spending if you're getting paid millions of dollars to write something,
right?
Should,
and you're
at
asking
least
you're asking people to give up their evening or whatever to come see it.
You can't do that.
No, you can't do that. It doesn't make any. It's nonsense. If every story is supposed to be nonsense or not supposed to be taken seriously, then why is there dialogue in it in the first place? It doesn't, like, that I get it's, you, and I get, and I get arguing about it is ridiculous. I understand that. But the argument that you're taking this too seriously is kind of nonsense.
What I find interesting is that I'm kind of on both sides of this whole argument.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can pull up, because there's certain points that I feel that you're right, Hassan, and certain points that I feel you're right, Dominic. Wow. That was actually quite an interesting debate news item. Are we ready for our break, Brian?
Sure.
We'll be right back with Came From Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
You had plenty money, 1922. You let other women make a fool of you. Why don't you do right? Like some other men do. Get out of here.
She
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to We Came From Radio. This is your host, Mara Toro, speaking along with our very special guest host, Dominic Sparano, celebrating 5 years of Pronto Comics.
Longest 5 years of my life. No, and, it's been good.
And our very own Hassan Godwin in Purgatory.
Yeah, me, Purgatory.
So, so this week, I decided that we were going to be talking about behind the scenes. Something that's been we've been talking about for quite some time, actually, on this show, about how the fans are all clamoring about stuff that's going to happen, and then when it actually happens, they're really on to the next thing that's going to happen because right. of all the behind-the-scenes stuff. And I remember as a kid, and back in the day, there wasn't so much access, so you just had to wait for the movie to come out and then enjoy the movie as it is. Mm-hmm. So I thought this would be something that we can discuss. Since you're our guest, how do you feel about all the access and the behind-the-scenes that are happening in today's media?
I like to wait to after I've seen something and then get the behind-the-scenes stuff. I'm not as interested in behind-the-scenes thing as it's happening, as the movie's being filmed, personally, because it's like, well, I get some really crappy shots of pictures without the CGI, so it doesn't really mean anything. I'm looking at a really pretty actor that's in front of a green screen, so this doesn't help
Wait,
me.
What? You don't dig when you get, like, prompted by some online news site that says, you know, exclusive, you know, visuals of Age of Ultron, and then you click on it, and it's like a picture of Chris Evans eating his eating a donut.
Yeah, you know,
that doesn't move you. That doesn't thrill you.
You know, that doesn't do it for me at all. You know, like, you know, it, plus I like being surprised just a little bit. You know,
what about you, Hassan?
Guy's old school.
He is old school, yet younger than both of us. So.
Yeah,
I completely agree. You know, with
because it's just a movie.
What was that?
Because it's just a movie.
Yeah, it is. It's only a film. I do. I'm a huge fan of behind the scenes, like as sellable material. Like say, like a you know, like a DVD box set of a movie I love. You know, I'm all over it, you know, just like, yeah. And especially the package is like this gigantic special edition box set with, you know, 10 hours of, you know, footage of, you know, some guy washing a surfboard or whatever the heck that they add on as additional or supplemental material.
I don't know if I'd want to pay for watching 10 hours of a guy washing a surfboard. First of all, why should it take more than 15 minutes?
But it's about the guy who's washing the surfboard until you get it. But that's the thing. I do appreciate that stuff. I don't appreciate the behind the scenes before the film, before I've seen it. You know, I do appreciate, like, you know, not knowing anything about it, not knowing a lot about it. I don't appreciate this kind of this smorgasbord of misinformation that goes on about every film. That like this episode 7 crap. Where every 15 minutes, there's some kind of new revelation about episode 7. We're already set up for a fall. There's no way that this movie can live up to the hype behind it. If we're only talking about who's supposed to be in it and what they're supposed to be doing, and people are making up their own sand posters and, you know, or whatever. It's insane. It's way too much.
I think the general public will enjoy episode 7 because it's Disney, and Disney knows how to entertain people. They own your childhood. They know how to entertain people.
They don't own my childhood. They don't own my childhood.
No, they own anything that you liked in your childhood. They own it now. See what I mean?
They do have Star Wars, and they do have they have a couple other things.
They have Star Wars.
They don't have He-Man. They don't have He-Man.
They don't have He-Man. They have Star Wars. They have He-Man. They have Star Wars. They have Marvel. They have Muppets. You know, like.
And I hold out. There's still things in my childhood I like that I don't tell anybody about, so that no one will.
So Disney won't go buy it. Thank you.
So that's who's spying on you in Purgatory right now is Disney.
Disney. The octopoidal corporation that is Disney. You know, but I trust in Disney knowing how to entertain people. And for that reason, J.J. Abrams, like, rewrote the script to bring back, you know, Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, and Princess Leia more prominently. Because it's like what we were just talking off the air. If people like, you know, they want to really connect it to the first three films.
Right.
So that way you feel connected to it. Because when they redo things, people have like an emotional gut reaction, like, well, if I like this, that means that I don't like the other movies anymore. It's like, you know, when you're, you know, if your parents get separated and your mom marries like a guy, he's a really good guy, but now you feel like somehow you're betraying your father. if I like George because he's a good guy too, but oh no, it's the same thing. It's like, I can't like this movie because then Christopher Reeve will cry in heaven. You know what I mean? So,
man.
Well, it's just a movie.
Exactly. It's just a movie. So everyone needs to chill and just go enjoy the movie.
It doesn't really mean you hate Christopher Reeve.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, but I think some people have that gut reaction. It's like, oh.
Those people are dumb, though.
Well, the problem is that those people are the ones that are voting with their wallets.
Right.
And if, because as we've mentioned many times, we are a capitalist society. And blah, 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 make money, whatever. But people are clicking on to these things. People are finding all this information. They have to go get as much information as possible. Today's people.
The wallet vote doesn't really work anymore, though, unfortunately. Because it's pretty much the common wisdom that the prequels are crap. Right? Even though I completely disagree.
And they made a bazillion dollars.
And they made a ton of money. So obviously, you know, that doesn't stop the witch hunt from happening.
So, I mean,
Man of Steel made a ton of money.
Yeah.
And so did Into Darkness, although it didn't make the ton of money that they had hoped that it would make.
Right.
You know, yeah. But it's been judged, you know, it's been weighed and measured and come up with so did the fourth Indiana Jones movie. Yeah. It made a crap load of money. It made enough where it wasn't a disappointment, and it made enough where there, you know, there's still people talking about making a fifth one, even though everyone is.
Oh no, they'll make like a whole new series of it.
Not a Disney.
Maybe.
Then,
I mean,
Disney owns it. They'll do something.
There'll
with
be
it.
A fifth one with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And then they're talking about rebooting the whole thing, which I think would be a disaster.
Well, I hate the concept of the reboot. You know, like Amazing Spider-Man came out. Too, and they rebooted it. Like, why? Everyone knows the origin of Spider-Man. If you don't know the origin of Spider-Man, rebooting it doesn't help anyway. Like, you clearly are not interested in Spider-Man. So just take what Sam Raimi did and just move on making just new Spider-Man stories.
Well,
why do you
reboot
the whole thing?
Because they didn't want to lose the license on it. And
but if Sony owns the license on it, right? So why doesn't Sony just make a new Spider-Man movie?
It's all about money.
And just,
because
they
felt that the stain of Spider-Man 3 was too big to overcome.
Why?
Because
of emo Spider-Man doing a whole song and dance number, snapping his fingers in the middle of the bar.
That's true, but you know what? The problem is Spider-Man 3 still made twice as much as the Amazing Spider-Man 1.
See, so I'm saying just like, you know, recast everyone, do the whole thing, but just, you don't, why do you have to reboot it and take it back now?
Why start it over?
Yeah, why?
It's
just
money.
Just move along.
They want to add the Peter Parker mystery now, so that he could... So they could build to the Scarlet Spider and all that other stuff.
Well, I mean, it took James Bond 20,
it's 22, I think, right now.
Yeah, it took 22. James Bond 20 films to have to reboot. So, like, you know, you think Spider-Man's bigger than James Bond? Like, just
nobody
keep it moving,
that kind
you know?
Of time anymore, though.
You know?
No one's going to put that much effort into it. I was thinking about the other day, and this is just television, that, like, NYPD Blue, that show lasted 12 years.
Yep.
You think of any show today that's even striving for 6 or 7 years, everybody's like 5 or 6 years and out.
Because you get that syndication.
Nobody's got the attention span for that stuff anymore.
Well, I mean, there was Law & Order. That lasted for, what, 20?
Law & Order is, but it doesn't qualify because the cast has changed so often. It is technically not the same show from the way it started to the point where it finished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the cast of NYPD Blue was still there that last episode.
Right.
So, I mean, people don't have that attention span anymore. People are not even thinking that long term.
Well, people can only think in 140 characters.
So is that why?
Exactly.
So is that why everybody is jumping all over the behind-the-scenes footage that's coming out now? Because the attention span
behind
is...
Behind-the-scenes is just to make sure that nobody loses interest in this thing. To keep drumming up, to keep it fresh in your head, and keep drumming up that enthusiasm and build it up so that when it comes, there's that gigantic explosion and everybody, you know, decides that this is the greatest movie ever for, you know, the 15 or 20 minutes it takes to have a gigantic weekend opening, and then, you know, and then start building up to... I mean, we were talking about Captain America 3 before the second one came out.
Yeah.
We were talking about when Captain America 3 was going to come out at simultaneous with Man of Steel 2 and blow Man of Steel 2 away in anticipation of this gigantic Captain America.
But that's also because Marvel is just such a well-oiled machine at this point. As a matter of fact, they're so well-oiled, they taught Disney things how to do stuff properly. So... Yeah.
And on the same,
into, but I mean, look at the good thing about Marvel and everything else is that it took time to get that way.
Yeah,
people are trying to instantaneously reinvent that kind of formula.
No, they
that
had
formula
like a,
wasn't
you know.
Conceived overnight.
No, this was a well-structured plan thing that they've been working on for like over a decade.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember talking to Joe Quesada once, and just on the comic book front. I asked him, like, as, you know, editor-chief of Prana Comics, I wanted to ask you a question from one editor-chief to another. He's like, okay, sure. You know, like, how far in advance do you have things planned out? And he told me, we have things in pencil in, like, 2 to 3 years in advance, and we have things in pen for at least a year in advance. So if that's how they just plan for the comic books, let alone for, like, the greater marketing strategy and everything else that they do particularly. So, you know, they definitely know well ahead of time, like, how many different movies are going to come out. And then they probably already have quietly cast who's going to pick up the slack on becoming Tony Stark and Captain America the next round. See, but they're smart. They're not rebooting these things within Marvel Studios.
But the sad thing is that if they have a bad idea, that means they're going to have to run with that bad idea for a long time.
Yeah, but at this point, I think they're so good that they already have discarded bad ideas. You know, I mean, they know what their fan base really wants. I mean, look at Captain. In terms of Marvel Studios, I'm being very specific about.
I'm
going to
go
Studios.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. if they know what they want, then what the hell happened with that show?
See, but as I understand, I haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I'm not around at night to watch the show. But what I heard from about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was that basically they held a lot of things back on the pacing until Captain America came out, and then everyone's going, oh, now it makes so much sense. And now they've gone and they're running with it.
But it's a little late because.
You would think, you see, that's where behind the scenes stuff would kind of come in handy if you think about it. Like,
well designed, then they would have said, look, this is going to be. But I think the problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is it's using an ancient formula. Because I don't believe that something like that works in a 22-episode format anymore. People are not interested in, you know, the filler episodes. People want to get to the meat of it. And it's using a 20-year-old formula where people would accept, you know, episodes in the middle of the season where everybody was dressed like, all the guys were dressed like girls for some ridiculous heist kind of movie or some kind of comedy relief. When everybody just wants you to pretty much get to the point, they want all the episodes, they want all the serial parts to be on message.
What really is like ruined it in that aspect isn't, you know, it's HBO and FX.
Cable television, yeah.
For having great shows that are concentrated for 13 episodes.
Yeah,
so
13 episodes.
Based off what Hassan's saying, they should do a 13-episode run everything to lead up to the next big movie. Which, so, it's kind of like when they do big crossovers in comic books.
Right.
But you still have the regular title going on feeding the crossover.
Yes.
That's how I'm looking at it. Like, the big crossovers are the big movies, and the regular comic book right now is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, if you're a comic book fan, you can kind of get, like, into the mindset of it.
You got to get off that formula.
Well, just the 22-episode formula, condensed down to 13 episodes.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to do that because ABC.
This is me, like, pushing, by the way, to have a job at Marvel. You know, I'm like, I can tell you what to do, guys. Hire me.
Actually, you make a valid point about cutting down the episodes.
I did?
Oh, my yes. God. 24, a very good show, is coming back.
Right.
And they're only going to do 13 episodes as opposed to 24.
Right.
And what they decided to do is they're going to cut out the filler and just focus on 1 hour, just like the formula was, 1 hour per one show.
Right.
And it's going to start to finish, but they're going to jump ahead of time with all the boring stuff cut out.
Okay.
So the... attention span of the fans might be the problem of where this is all stemming from.
Well, is it an attention span thing, or is it just that people have cut out the filler? So we're used to just getting really good, intense stories now in 13 episodes. Because, I mean, if I remember when Rescue Me did a 22, like a thing, because the writer's strike or something, and so they extended it. And, you know, it felt like they just took two seasons and just smashed them together. where I got used to, like, in, you know, like, they did a great arc in 13 episodes each time. So it's like, okay, they did an arc, and then they did another arc. And by that point, I had forgotten what the arc was, the first arc. And I have a pretty good attention span, you know. Cat, what? No, I have a pretty good attention span. So it's really just, I'm used to this format, and it's more enjoyable that way. You know, and rather than, like, silly filler and stuff, which is fine for, like, for a sitcom. Sitcom, because, you know, there's really not a cohesive story.
Yeah, because sitcoms very rarely have intense storylines.
Right. So, I mean, if it's an intense storyline, you're kind of killing the storyline. It's a problem, again, in comic books that they've had now, too. Like, when you did a 24-issue storyline of, you know, Blackest Night or Brightest Day and stuff, I remember that coming out, and we were talking to Bob Rozakis, the Answer Man at DC. And he's saying, like, you know, if I was ever going to pitch a 24-issue storyline, I would have gotten laughed out the room in DC. It's like, it used to be that every comic book had a beginning, middle, and end, with maybe like a little thread of a story, but each one was its own independent thing. And there was never the idea of a 12-issue arc, per se, like maybe a 6-issue arc or whatever. You know, so it's just kind of what used to work was a shorter storyline and more, you know, make each episode a quality episode. And if it takes 13 episodes to do that in and have an overall story, that's better than trying to pad things out. Because it's really just, you can hold someone's attention if the story is good. And if the story is bad, you're not going to. So if you're padding out the stories to, like, hit a certain amount of things, then shorten it up.
So
yeah, well, the problem is that if you bought the standard format, right? They paid for the standard format with ABC. 22, you know, and they contract for 22 episodes. The issue then becomes you can't keep stringing people along for 22 episodes. That's why they broke it down to 13 to 10, mm-hmm. because you can basically tell a decent story in 10 hours or 13 hours, which you cannot really tell a decent story in 22 hours because 4 or 5 of those hours are going to have to be, you know, superfluous. You know, it's going to have to be negligible. It's not really that you can keep someone's attention for that long. It's just you can't. If you have a mystery, if the beginning of it, you say, "Look, at the end of this, we're going to find out who baked this cake." You can't have 4 or 5 episodes of, you know, of cake ingredient mixtures and you know, and the science of making cake. In the process of trying to string along.
I'm glad I ate a sandwich before I showed up because now I'm getting hungry and want cake.
Yeah, in the process of.
And the mystery is not who baked the cake. The mystery is who left the cake out in the rain.
Let me see. We got less than 5, actually less than 3 minutes to go. So, Hassan, you actually make a valid point, as you usually do, except when I don't agree with you.
Which is often.
You have any final thoughts there, Hassan?
Yeah. And we're done.
That's funny. Well played.
Those
well
were deep.
Played.
Very deep.
Dominic, final thought?
It's just a movie, man. Can I actually get a quick plug in?
You can do a quick plug in? You have a minute to go. Quick.
Okay, quick plug. May 13th at One Star Bar on 147 West 24th Street, where Prano Comics is doing its first comic book trivia night. Starts at 8 o'clock. It'll be hosted by my managing editor, Patrick J. Riley. He may be dressed as Alex Trebek. I don't know. And we'll be selling comic books and T-shirts and raffle tickets and a whole bunch of stuff. And it's a really great bar, and I suggest everyone go down there if you want to participate in comic book trivia, specifically comic book trivia.
And if they want to find more about that, they go to?
ProntoComics.com, and that'll lead you to the Facebook page. And I'm at ProntoEIC on Twitter, and you can follow me there, and ProntoComics.com.
My final thought is, it may just be a movie, but if you're paying money and you're spending time with it, it should be worth something. That about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any part of this show, you can go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com, and can listen to the archives, which will be up in a week or so. We will see you next week, and thanks again, Dominic, for coming down.
Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.